This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 10 for property ID 8735005. The property is owned by Brant Hubbard. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagberg, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Christian Wolf and Rena Hunter here on behalf of the appellant. If you could both now please raise your right hands to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property or your client's property as of January 1st, 2025. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal. So whoever wants to talk.
All right. I did some research on the land market value, and I was looking through the county clerk's website and looking up the different prices of the land. And what I noticed is that the assessor has put that all the land that's riverfront property has the same land market value of $750,000. That should coincide with the documents that are that you all have. And our case is that the land on which Brant's home sits, being so close to the sewage processing plant and the industrial plants, that the value cannot be the same as the other homes that are upriver. I would like to allow Rena to speak to this a little bit and kind of give personal experience as to some of the factors that are included in that.
Yeah, let me just make one statement first.
Sure.
The law says that the assessor has a responsibility to value the property in total and make a reasonable allocation between land and building. And we're not allowed to value one versus the other one, particularly. We look at the total value, and then unless there's some completely abnormal factors involved with the land, you know, like half of it is a cliff that goes straight up and down, it might have an impact on the value versus some other properties. But generally speaking, the land value is an allocation, a reasonable allocation by the assessor. So,
okay, understood.
Having said that, I just want you to understand where we're coming from.
Understood. Thank you for that clarification.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I've lived at this property for the last 6 years, and while it is wonderful to have, you know, the river view, there are a couple of things. We're very close to an industrial marine company that works on the river, moving. They've got multiple barges that they're moving in and out, welding, banging of loud metal, so there is some disruption to the, you know, serenity of the property from that, as well as odors and that type of thing. Then also living very close to the sewer plant, we're just literally one house away from the sewage treatment plant. They test their, I guess, emergency facility every week on Thursday. And that process is starting up an extremely loud diesel motor that's housed. I mean, it's an entire, the motor fills an entire structure. There's a very low pipe, and there is, it spews out black, very stinky diesel smoke for about 10 minutes every Thursday morning. When that happens, like if we have any windows open, it's in our house, and or if we're out in the yard, you know, it's very strong. Don't like to walk my dog during that time. It's pretty disruptive during that time. And I actually have called to see if they could do something about the height of their smokestack, which is very low. And I was told that because it's a city sewage plant, they don't have to comply with any sort of smokestack height, and so there would not be the option to raise that pipe up. So when that blows, it blows directly into our house. That's how low the pipe is. And that's all I would like to say.
Okay, I'm looking at the map that you presented there, and you're like the second house in on that street. Mm-hmm. from the sewage treatment plant.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. And I guess that marine operation you were talking about is the other piece of thing that you're referring to that's out in the water?
Correct, yes.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I believe those were the two main points, yes.
Do you have any properties that you want to compare it to?
No.
Okay, I have no further questions. Lisa, Terry?
You mentioned a covenant established on the title here. Was that a newly established, or was that there when the house was purchased?
What is the covenant referring to?
Well, it's a restriction on the, I believe you said your front yard is what I've.
Yeah, there was a covenant that was attached to the property before we purchased it that restricted the height of any plants, hard structures, that limits the ability to have anything higher than, I believe it's 36 inches. So, you know, can't plant trees, can't put an awning on the deck, can't have any kind of fence or structure between the properties that would be higher than 36 inches.
Does the property have waterfront?
It does.
And the property line goes up to the high water mark or median high water?
I believe that's correct.
I mean, it doesn't go out into the water, though.
No. Okay. The water does fluctuate significantly throughout the season, throughout the year. So, for instance, like currently, there's a lot of exposed, I guess if you want to call it beachfront. During the winter, the water in spring, the water does rise significantly. You know, we've got some stairs that go down to the water or to the base there, and that the water will come up halfway up those stairs. So it does require maintenance because of there is that water fluctuation.
Okay. And back to the CC&Rs, is that recorded on the deed?
Yeah, there was, apparently it was originally on the deed, and then it somehow didn't transfer, but it was on the original deed. And so we looked into it to see if it was on the current deed, and it wasn't. But the person that had originally, which is actually the neighbor who originally had sold the property, was insistent that that be then added back in. That was the height restriction on things. So like, for instance, like our railing around our deck had to be lowered, and, you know, trees and shrubs and things like of that nature needed to be cut down. So I believe it was originally on the deed, and then somehow it didn't get put on the deed accidentally when it transferred, and now it was re-added back on. That's my understanding.
Is that an HOA CC&R, or where's it come? Where was it serviced?
It's not an HOA. It was a specific covenant, I guess. I don't know if that's the correct term, that the original landowner put on the property when they sold it. Okay. And the idea behind it was she maintained the property to the west of us. And she wanted to make sure that there was never any sort of structure or shrubs or fence or anything that would obstruct her view.
Okay. And it's probably in the information you submitted, but what year did you purchase the property?
Ooh. Do you have that information, Christian?
Let me check here really quickly.
It's not crucial. I was just curious how long.
It looks like according to the property information.
What did you pay for it?
According to the Property Information Center, it was purchased in April 2015 for $645,000.
Okay, great. Yep. Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Is there a name to this housing area?
There's no neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Not that I know of. Okay. There's an adjacent neighborhood to the east of us, but our little area is kind of more of a cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's five houses.
Oh, I see. That makes it clear what Allison's showing. Got it.
Have you appealed in previous years?
I believe there was one appeal that was done, and I can't remember if it was denied. I believe it was denied based on the timing of it. We hadn't submitted the appeal within the designated time.
Okay.
Did you receive the information from the assessor?
Are you referring to the letter?
The response yes. From them?
Yes, we did receive it.
Dave, I have nothing further. Lisa, John, Terry?
No, I don't.
I see the assessor's response on the form. You do, I assume it's not marked that you do not accept the assessor's finding. No indication and no signature. Is that just overlooked or not responded, or what was the situation there?
If people don't sign or respond, we just move forward with the hearing. They're not required to respond to that. It's only required if we close it.
Very, very good. Okay, no further questions from me. Thank you.
Okay, you'll hear from us within 30 days. Did we lose Christian?
Thank you.
I guess we did.
Christian, I know, he looks frozen, doesn't he? Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Close the hearing.
This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. Before us, we have one late file submitted by Philip Miles Mixer. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagberg, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. The late file, like I said, is submitted by Philip's Mixer. It is for property ID 18167728. He is using the request for reconvening code 01, which says that the appellant or the taxpayer did not receive a notice of value. He writes, I purchased the home for $575,000, but it was assessed at $646,534. I purchased the home after the assessed value report was sent to the previous owners. I want to reconvene to get the property value adjusted to the purchase price. I did not receive the notice of value because I did not own or live in the home when it was sent.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I will mark that as a yes, and that concludes the late filings for October 7th. All right. This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 9 for property ID 986039781. The property is owned by William and Kate LeBurns. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagberg, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office and no one present from the appellant. The appellant submitted three comparable sales. Property ID 86975220 sold for $638,000 in August 2024. ID 986061925 sold for $799,658 in April 2025. And property ID 12584605 sold for $509,000 in May 2025. The assessor's evidence included five comparable sales, a property information card, and a cover letter recommending no change to the assessed value. I will turn it over to Chairman Daniel Weaver.
Since there's no one present for either party, we'll make a decision based on the information available. Any questions?
No questions.
No questions.
Close the hearing.
This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 2 for property ID 231373000. The property is owned by Richard and Martha Shelb. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagberg, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office and no one present from the appellant. No detailed quantitative information was provided by the appellant for board review, and the assessor's evidence included four comparable sales, a property information card, and a cover letter recommending no change to the assessed value. I will turn it over to Chairman Daniel Weaver.
Since there was no one present for either party, we'll make a decision based on information available. Any questions?
No questions.
No questions.
Close the hearing.
This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 5 for property ID 23139600. The property is owned by Richard and Martha Shelb. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagberg, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office and no one present for the appellant. The no detailed quantitative information was provided by the appellant for board review, and the assessor's evidence included five comparable sales, a property information card, and a cover letter recommending no change to the assessed value. I will turn it back over to Chairman Daniel Weaver.
Since there's no one present for either party, we'll make a decision based on information available. Any questions?
No question.
No question.
Close the hearing.
This is the October 7th, 2025 hearings for the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 16 for property ID 973-10050. The property is owned by Maxim Sihanovich and Jill Samuel. Board members present by video conference are Terry Hagber, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have both Maxim and Jill here for the appellants. If you could both please raise your right hands now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2025. Keep in mind, the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
We understand the procedure.
Okay, go ahead and tell us whatever you want to about this.
Sure. Our central thesis is that the assessor's methodology isn't publicly available, and they clearly use some heuristics in their methodology. For example, what if there aren't enough comparables to use market-based sales data to value a methodology? They have to have some year-over-year change-based heuristics that they use. And because their methodology isn't publicly available, how can we know that it's fair? So we propose a methodology based on publicly available data and year-over-year changes, which should be less biased. And if I understand correctly, the purpose of assessment is to value every property fairly, so that then everyone pays their fair share of property taxes.
Well, the premise of property taxes is that they are to be valued at the current fair market value, not fair per se, but the fair market value of that property. And the assessor has a methodology which has been approved by the state to value properties on a what I want to say gross valuation basis. And what they do is they develop a model of the based on the sales in the prior 12 months from the assessment date. And they sell, and they take all the sales and they put those parameters, like if that's a four-bedroom house, 2,500 square feet, all that, put all those parameters into their model, and then they then put your parameters for your property into that model, and the value comes out as a result of the modeling that has been put into the computer.
Yes, so we did that exercise as well. We did a modeling exercise ourselves. We used the bulk data that the assessor makes available. This is the area sales report 7225.zip that we got from Clark White, wa.gov/assessor/residential-property-sales-information. In the bulk data, there was 2 years of data. So starting from January 4th, 2023 until December 2024. But this data didn't have basic information like number of bedrooms or bathrooms. It had like property identification number, assessment neighborhood, parcel address style, building type, quality, year built, main and upper living area, basement area, parcel size, view, waterfront, sale date, and original and adjusted sale amount. So in their bulk data that they make available, they don't even have like bedrooms and bathrooms. So presumably they have some other data set that they must use for their model, but hard for us to verify if their modeling is reasonable. So the modeling that we were able to do with this bulk data that the assessor makes available, we got a root mean squared error of about like $137,000. And that's more than 20% of the median adjusted sales amount, which is $550,000. So with this, like, their model is probably pretty noisy if this is the data they use in the model.
Well, that information, the detailed information you talk about is available in the GIS system for each individual property. If you're just
I agree.
If you're looking at the sales data, it's not in there usually, but within the individual property description, it's there. I have to tell you, sorry to tell you, you don't have a proven model. I mean, and we are not capable of evaluating your model and how it goes together based on the information there. And we wouldn't be, even if you gave us full information, we wouldn't be able to evaluate your model. The assessor's model has been approved by the state of Washington. So, and under law, he has the presumption of correctness. So it would be very difficult for us to approve your modeling system.
Well, actually, our model, it sort of agrees with the assessor's methodology. I think they, in the letter they sent us, they said that they got a weighted exercise, gave us our house, our property, a value of 517,000, and the model we did, we got 515,000 as the median value. We did a quantile regression, and the P50 value was 515 for our property. But that's not what their property value is for us. It's actually lower than what their model says. So clearly they're not just using the model, they're like using some additional heuristics on top of the model's output. So are those heuristics also approved by the state of Washington?
Whatever their model produces and how it produces it has been approved by the state of Washington.
Do you know if the full methodology they use is publicly available anywhere?
I presume it is available, yes.
Mm-hmm. You presume it, or do you know that it's available?
Well, they're not allowed to hide anything, let's put it that way. So whether they have it readily available, they should be available, and if you petition the states, so if they didn't provide it to you, if you petitioned the state, I'm sure they would have to provide that information.
Okay.
And what they've done is provided you with some four comparable properties that justify the value they've set to your property. In other words, they've taken similar type properties and compare them to your property and justify the value assigned to your property.
Why are four properties sufficient to justify value?
It's not the way they valued it, it's just to prove that the market captures the same value that yours would in terms of comparable properties, and that's what you would have to do to prove it otherwise, that the characteristics that you provide in comparable properties would produce a value similar to yours or similar to the one you wanted, and why it's different than the assessor.
My question is more specific. Why is four properties considered any evidence? Like, why is it four? Why not one? Why not 10?
Well, four properties is an indication of that their value is correct. Their value is determined by the modeling that I told you about, and then all they've done here is produced four properties that justify the value they've set based on those four properties and the similarities of the properties. It's not
define how it justifies, because justify it based on a subjective assessment, or in what sense do they justify it?
It's just a show that they are not valuing your property different than they value other properties of similarity. It's not the way they determine the value, it's just justifying that value.
Purpose
of the valuation determined is the fair market value of your property at the date of assessment. And the law is written so that comparable properties will justify the value of a particular property in the valuation process. So that's what they've done, is put comparable properties, making adjustments for, you know, differences in size, shape, bedrooms, this and that, to make them similar to your property. And that's what they've provided there. And you can do the same thing by producing properties that are very similar to yours and showing a different value. The law is written in such a manner that you must first prove that the assessor is wrong, and then secondly, you must show that there is a better value to your property.
I see. I don't think we have evidence to show that the assessor is wrong. We have evidence to show that it's difficult to assess whether or not the assessor is right or wrong, right? So yeah, I guess that's not sufficient for the requirements you guys have.
Petition for the methodology.
And it looks as though you're capable of producing a model, and if you choose to push it further, I'm sure that you can get the entire modeling process that the assessor uses.
Okay. Sounds
good. And if you wish to do a further appeal, then you have 30 days to do that. You can file your appeal. It will be some number of months before you ever have to produce your information. So you have time to do whatever you need to do to refute that, if you demand that information and have the capability to replicate it or show that it has errors in it.
I mean, the problem is the law that assessor is presumed right by the state. I mean, it's hard to start from that basis. But I mean, for us, for the assessor, it makes sense.
And I agree with you 100%. The law is written in favor of the assessor, not in favor of the appellant, unfortunately.
Okay.
And we have to live by the same law. Some of us appeal our property values also.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So your best method of producing a value is to get comparable properties and show that they're more comparable than the assessors produce.
Comps, yeah.
That's the easiest way for you.
The definition of more comparable?
Well, if for instance, if you're in a housing development and there are 10 houses in the development that are the same model as yours, maybe with slight tweaks to it, and if you can get that information on a sale basis, they have to be sales of property, similar properties, and show that demonstrates that your property should be valued at a different value than the assessor comes up with. And that would be that you would show, for instance, You know, he has properties that are 1,800, which is similar to yours, 1,500, 1,400, and 1,400 square feet. So if you have properties that are all exactly like your model and they're plus or minus 10 or 15 square feet from your model and all the same characteristics, number of bedrooms, number of baths, and so on, and you have those all lined up and the sales data to prove it, you would have better comparables than the assessor has. The assessor, also, I will tell you, the assessor uses a program called Comper that produces these comparables for him. So it, those are driven by a computer program also. Okay. So they're not hand-picked by the assessor. They used to do that, you know, prior to a couple of years ago, hand-pick those. Now the bulk of them are all produced by a computer model.
Do you know if Comper also, so for example, in the comparables, one of them had like 1,880 square feet, whereas ours is 1,812, and they said that the effect on the price of the 70 extra square feet was zero. And then there was another comparable where it was like 300 square feet difference, and that one did have an effect on the price. Does this Comper model slash program decide the change in the features, what the effect on the price is based on the change in the features?
So
I'm sure there's a percentage plus or minus that they have no impact.
So yeah, Comper is an appraisal software, so it would be using residential appraisal numbers to come up with those values. Ideally, I would assume it's similar to AI technology, but programming in with appraisal values, so similar to what Dan said, within a certain percentage it would have zero effect, but over a certain percentage it would have an effect on the value for square footage. So that's how Comper would be used. Again, we don't get access to Comper at the Board of Equalization, but it is a publicly purchased product. You could look into it if you wanted to. Sorry, Dan.
No problem. Yeah, okay, so I guess for us the most interesting thing is trying to get transparency in their methodology, but I don't know if that's kind of a dead end in terms of affecting property taxes or might be just for curiosity.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to your question, but I just know that that is it, and we have no methodology of testing that.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.